Farmer-Led Podcast, the Farm's Voice Podcast. So thank you for tuning in. For those that farm it, service it, or just outright love it, we bring you the techniques and technologies you need to motivate and implement into your day to improve it one way or another. Make sure you share the Farm's Voice to make another farmer's day. Welcome back to the Farm's Voice Podcast. This is the fourth episode, and I think the 90th episode we've ever had on here, as we jump back into APEN Network and all about the APEN conference for 2022. It has passed now. It was online on the 9th to the 11th of February, but what we got out of it was a lot of information that we can come away with, some insights into what's happening with the extensionists across the country and also across the globe as well. There was some really good speakers on there. I actually got a lot out of it myself, and also great to be partnered with APEN, the Australasian Pacific Extension Network, for the podcast to get this information distributed to you as a farmer, someone that serves the industry, or just someone that purely loves it. As we say, so if you farm it, service it, or you just love it, this episode is for you. So today on the episode, we talk to Noel Ainsworth. Noel's career has involved a number of management, extension research and consulting roles in agriculture, natural resource management and the environment. Noel and John have sought out to identify which key elements separate an engaging meeting, so he really knows how to keep it engaging, and I'm sure you'll find out more throughout this episode. So let's get into it and chat to Noel, who's come on into the online studio. Noel Ainsworth, how are you today?
Fantastic. Look, great to have a chat to you today, Jack.
Amazing to have you on the show and get your expertise on. Where are you calling in from today?
Today, I'm based out of Brisbane, like many people, working from home, but really thinking about maintaining that communication with clients. So that's what I'm here today about.
Well, the world of 2021 and 2022 made it that much easier. I talk with farmers all the time, and I think in 2010, trying to get a farmer on Zoom would near be impossible, but today it's easy as.
Yeah, look, it's a lot better for some people, but certainly the last couple of years we've seen a little bit of fatigue with that as well.
Yeah, true.
Bit of novelty at the start, and when it's really important and we're really targeted with who we need to contact on a meeting, Zoom can be fantastic, along with the other platforms.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to get it started, and it also allows yourself and I to have this conversation about your experience, background, and also about the APEN conference coming up around the corner. Let's get into it and see what your background is, your connection to Australian agriculture.
Yeah, certainly I've been working in agriculture probably most of my career, that and sort of natural resource management, which is fairly typical, I guess. I've worked in a number of the states, in a number of industries. So yeah, I've got a real feel for that, as well as a family background in agriculture.
Amazing. And what do you feel about agriculture in 2020? How far it's come since you've worked in it, do you think?
I guess I still have the same basic sort of that I'm impressed by people who can make a living out of the soil and the sunlight and a bit of water. But certainly agriculture is a lot more sophisticated now. And there's a lot more technical nous that a lot of very professional people have.
Yeah, absolutely. And moving into 2022, seeing a huge shift into digital agriculture and using more technologies, but also a huge transfer of assets is just around the corner, from baby boomers and even older down to generations like myself and a bit younger. So it is an exciting time to be in it.
Yeah, look, there's certainly the scale of change and the range of opportunities out there are incredible, and that connection across the world with products and technologies is incredible.
Absolutely. And let's get into your role. What's your current role at the moment? You're for APEN, you're the Southern Queensland Coordinator. Talk to us a little bit about that and what that
means to you and the APEN network?
So I guess APEN always wants to keep very close to its members, both in terms of communicating to them, but also facilitating communication between members, I guess.
Yep.
So as a coordinator for Southern Queensland, I try to keep connection between the 70-odd members in my area. We've done that previously with a range of initiatives like book clubs and various things, just to have that conversation, you know, between conferences and all the other media, like, you know, the newsletters and all the rest of it. But yeah, I guess I try to play that active communication role as one of the support roles I offer, just as a volunteer.
Yeah, it's pretty vital, and I suppose it is a bit rewarding working within a network and seeing how all the cogs turn, and especially from your background of dealing with supply chains across Australia and across the world.
Yeah, I guess from both perspectives. I mean, in terms of APEN members, there's a lot of, you know, very experienced and some less experienced people out there who've got great ideas and initiatives, especially during this time of disruption that they've been trying. And one of the key things is making sure we form connections to share those ideas and lessons and discuss the pros and cons of these things, because it's a great opportunity. And unfortunately, many extensionists don't work in big teams. They're working by themselves or in groups of two or three. And APEN provides that opportunity to connect with others with similar sort of interests and backgrounds. So it's that great sort of network which we're trying to build upon.
Yeah, I think you really need that diversity at the moment just to get those new ideas and poke them out of people to see what they can come up with and see how we can improve farmers right through from the farm gate into the end consumer, and how we can really improve the products, but also the quality of that right the way through. So let's talk about your role. You've mostly working within horticulture, getting the products to the end consumer, to the retail.
Yeah, so I work with mainly exporters. So sometimes they're just exporters, and some of them are both growers, packers, and exporters. But exporters are a very competitive bunch. You know, they're really looking to secure the best price they can in, you know, whether they're sending product through to the UAE or up into South Korea or into China. So, you know, we're certainly dealing with some distant clients who are probably a little bit hard to connect physically over the last couple of years. So certainly the digital space has been a great opportunity to make those connections and maintain those relationships, which is a big part of business.
Do you think a little bit of the relationship has broken down because pandemic and a bit constrained to staying in our home country?
I guess I do. I think that probably has been reduced a bit. I mean, the face-to-face connections at trade shows through Asia have been always an important part of most exporters' relationship building. And certainly that's I guess I refer to that as the bank accounts being drawn down a bit over the last year or two. We've sort of worked on what we'd built up before that. And even within Australia, you know, the ability to simply travel down between Brisbane and Melbourne on a routine basis, just to keep those relationships and connections fresh and trusting, has been a little bit more difficult. But certainly the visual capacity of things like Zoom have really been important for that.
Yeah, definitely. And allowing that produce to come through and maintain that quality right the way through. So going through your notes before, I read that the quality of fruit within the supply chain, how did this change in the pandemic and by improving that right the way through?
Yeah, well, certainly, I mean, the quality of product when it leaves the farm is often as good as it will get at that point. And there's recommended conditions by which, you know, you're supposed to send, you know, whether you're talking about lychees or avocados or mangoes or grapes, they each have their own set of unique conditions by which they should be transported. Now, in every supply chain, there's 101 compromises that are made. And most of the time, it's to get that product there on time. And with the pandemic and with disruptions to transport arrangements, certainly there's been the risk of more disruptions to that or more compromises. And I guess a lot of the work I'm involved with is making sure that as few compromises happen as possible to make sure we offer the buyer of that product the longest shelf life product possible to generate the returns that they'd like to achieve. And because, you know, each retailer's got their own ideas about how to best market that product. And of course, at the moment, as we look at Lunar New Year just around the corner, that's a really big item on the agenda for a lot of people around the world. And, you know, I'm sure the Chileans with their cherries are thinking very much about that at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's the most fragile produce that you do deal with?
Oh, I think one of the awards will go to lychees. They are very, very precarious, but certainly there's a lot of products like lychees and, I say, strawberries. You're just trying to keep them cool and in those high humidity conditions as much as possible, and they won't deteriorate much. But then there's a range of products that you put into the supply chain, and if you give them the whiff of the wrong conditions, and that's, you know, things like bananas, avocados, mangoes, they'll actually start to ripen on the way to the market. Yep. And so sometimes you can get a problem with that the product's arriving too forward, too ripe for them then to sell properly, or there's a mixture of ripeness within a load, and the whole lot has to be sorted then to separate the ripe from the unripe. So there's a few different sorts of product, and yeah, they all have their strengths and weaknesses, I guess.
Yeah, right. And then the other side of that, what's the easiest one? That would be citrus, to keep the quality right the way through.
Some of the ones that are almost guaranteed a nice smooth ride are those ones which, like citrus and grapes, often have treatment protocols. So they're, you know, especially product from the East Coast where they're treating for Queensland fruit fly. One of the disinfestation treatments they have to undergo on the way to market is they have to be at a certain temperature for a certain period of time to ensure that there's no survival of any insect larvae or anything like that. So that means they're going into shipping containers at set temperatures, and that's a really nice stable environment rather than other sea containers which aren't regulated in terms of their temperature, or stuff that's sent over on air freight, where, you know, you can get quite dramatic differences in temperatures as it goes through those supply chains. And then it depends on whether there's pets in the hold as to what temperature the fruit are at. So there's a whole lot of factors going on there.
Absolutely. There's a huge amount of variables taking place once you send it off the farm, and to keep that quality right the way through. I imagine it is a bit of a heartache, a bit of stress on you trying to follow that right the way through and keep the other end happy.
Yeah, look, I mean, exporters have to take into a whole lot of considerations when they're working with stuff. Some exporters will set the price at the start of a season and stick with that the whole way through, and they might set that price based on the US dollar. So you can even get shifts in the dollar through the season, which can either work in your favor or against you. So, you know, there's a whole range of factors, not just about what happens with each consignment, which may be sourced from a different block on a different farm and have slightly different characteristics.
Yeah, righto. So for at the moment, what's the pricing looking like? Because there's a bit of an oversupply of mangoes. You'd buy them for nearly $1.70 sometimes at our local supermarkets. What and how has this played out for exporting as well?
Mangoes have been doing fairly well in exports. I mean, one of the biggest challenges has been that they've traditionally probably 90% of mango exports in the past have gone by air freight, and we still haven't got that. And of course, air freight means largely in the hold of passenger flights.
Really?
Now, with the lack of... With the exception of probably a few more freighters that leave out of Sydney, but most of the mango freight that goes overseas is in passenger airlines. So that's been a bit difficult the last couple of years. Of course, we haven't had the volume of air traffic that we have in the past. So there's been a bit of restriction on that sort of opportunity. So there's been a bit more sea freight being used. But again, in the sea freight world, the demand on containers has been something that's been very difficult, and there's been a lot of very disrupted sea freight supply chains as well. So, but with all that said, it's never a bad thing if the price is under pressure in Australia, because it means that the price comparison between here and Singapore is there's no real difference. So there's often a better opportunity for export when the price is a little bit depressed in Australia.
Yeah, okay. So when you're flying produce with the passenger planes, is it because flying a cargo plane full of fruit produce, it's not quite worth it as it is as splitting the plane up to people and also produce?
No. It's just that there's space available.
Yeah,
there's that many planes,
yep,
and they never fill the hold with just the luggage. And there's always opportunity to get product, whether it's fruit and veg or meat or seafood. There's always opportunity to put product in them. And the other change, of course, is that we've seen a bit of a move away from the wide-bodied to the narrow-bodied aircraft, which has put a little bit more pressure, because that means you're only using the containers that go in the holds are the smaller AKE type rather than the big broader PMCs that go in the wide-bodied craft.
Yeah, great. I didn't even think about that, like going on a plane myself. I haven't seen a load of mangoes or anything coming in.
I'm one of those nerdy people who when I'm getting onto a plane to sort of follow product across, I'm always watching them loading the plane and putting the product in underneath where all the passengers go. So, yeah, it's there.
I try to always get the window seat, but I can't quite catch those mangoes each time they come in. But anyway, and also another note in yours was expanding business for the supply chains, exporters, but also for farmers finding new markets for their produce to go to. How has this worked out in the pandemic and also on the tail end, fingers crossed, coming out of it?
Well, I'll probably use avocados as an example.
Yep.
Up until the pandemic, we saw very small quantities of avocados going from Australia into, say, Singapore, Malaysia, Hong Kong. When we got the pandemic come in, and that was largely going in air freight. When the pandemic arrived, because of the lack of air freight capacity, we saw a real drop-off in exports. But now as we're emerging out of the pandemic, we're starting to see flights coming back on. But we've also seen at the same time a real change in the volume of product hitting the Australian market. So the prices come back. You'll certainly see that avocados are a lot cheaper this year and have been for about a year now than they have been in the past, which means it's a much more attractive thing. So we're seeing probably a 4 to 5-fold increase in the volume of avocados being looked at for exports. And certainly this summer, it's a very hot topic for those who are producing and supplying at the moment, which of course are the West Australian growers. They're very interested in the Japanese market, as well as supplying Hong Kong and, of course, the traditional markets of Malaysia and Singapore. So, yeah, there's been certainly some growth in that area, and that's really prompted by the comparison between the price in Australia and what happens over there. And it also influences the attractiveness of Australia as an importing destination. So, of course, we've always had probably 20% of our avocados come in from New Zealand. We've even seen some small amounts come in from Chile in the last year or two. And we've just seen some frozen product coming in from Vietnam this year. So the international price is a very important factor in what just happens there. Because of course, you know, Australian growers aren't fools. They're looking for the best return they possibly can get for their business, and whether that's domestic or export. And of course, this year, there's a much greater mix of both going on than there has been in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. And talking on the farmers looking for premium dollars paid for their produce, is Australia still really seen in the high standard of producing quality food and the safety measures that are around it with the pay that we have and everything like that?
Yeah, look, Australia still does retain a very strong reputational benefit. It's seen as the place where you don't have to really be assured that you're looking after workers. So, you know, you'll hardly see a banana sold in England that isn't fair trade, because it's all coming from South America. But they're not really looking for that same assurance of of workers' rights from Australia, because they know that's part of it. And the same with some of the environmental credentials. You know, both Australia and New Zealand are seen as this sort of clean and green source of food. And that's been important during the pandemic as people have sought out, you know, really healthy and safe options. So they're not necessarily looking for something that's got a Rainforest Alliance accreditation on it, because we've already got that reputation. And we also back that up by really always targeting the top end of the market. So, you know, if you're sending product into Singapore, it's not unusual for a store there to supply fruit from three or four different countries at three or four different prices. Yep. And that's because they're at different levels of quality, and they're often used for different purposes as well. So, you know, they're pretty savvy, the shoppers, you know, they know what they're looking for. So, you know, if you're, for instance, buying an avocado and you want to put it into a, and this is quite common in Singapore, if you want to use it for a milkshake with avocado and chocolate and a lot of sugar syrup, it's not as important to get the highest grade avocado, because you can hardly taste it with yep. all the other additives. But if you're using it for a salad or a specialty dish, and you really want to be able to taste that real nutty and creaminess, you know, you'll often see the buyers selecting fruit from either Australia, New Zealand, or probably California have got those reputations for really good quality.
Yeah, okay. So, but it's also a bit of a benefit that they want the lower grade somewhere else, and they also want the premium grade. So if you do have an offer as a farmer, you know that you do have a market that you can go to, maybe reduction in your price, but you can get it off.
Oh, look, certainly most of those buyers are looking for fruit at all grades.
Yep.
For different purposes. So yeah, it's not just about one grade in it, and then it depends on price and making sure we can get the lesser grade product there at the right price. That's sometimes a challenge. And sometimes that means instead of having it fancied up in a nice pretty box, it might be in a bulk container or something like that to keep those costs down.
Yeah, absolutely. So when exporting, how much is frozen and how much is fresh? Do you know?
Virtually none is frozen. It's mostly just all fresh. Once you start talking about a frozen product, it becomes like a sort of a stored product, and you don't achieve the seasonal benefit of getting it there at that time.
Yeah.
It's like something that's either, if something's frozen, it's like something that's dried or, you know, other sort of forms of processing where you really have to be competitive then against a lot of other suppliers where it doesn't have that limited life.
Yeah, definitely. So for yourself and dealing with your clients' products coming through every day and each day, how are the supply chains improving under such pressure of what 2020 brought on with the pandemic?
I mean, I guess that's one of the sweet sort of elements of technology that we've been able to look at the last few years. We've focused on doing a lot more monitoring of consignment so that we don't have to be there digging through the cool rooms or the trucks on arrival. We can actually put in effectively what are temporary mobile phones in with the product to monitor live temperature and location and humidity and light levels with the consignment and basically look that information up on our phone. We can track that, and we can then feed that information into predictive models to then get an idea of the impact on shelf life of the product. So we've got some really fantastic tools, both in terms of sensors and in terms of technologies to really make some better decisions about that product in that supply chain live.
Yeah, that sounds pretty great to have as like livestock and broadacre cropping. A lot of remote monitoring works really well. So it's similar to what you guys are doing. How many tons, or just one ton, half a ton per sensor roughly is it, or one sensor can do a plane?
It depends on what we're doing. If we're doing monitoring of sea containers, whether it's a 20 or a 40 footer,
yep.
Often you only need one or maybe two sensors in that. There's not much variation within those containers once you understand the sort of circulation patterns that are likely to be happening. In air freight, we're dealing with much smaller amounts, so it's really one sensor per container. So it may only be sort of one sensor per ton or something like that. But in a sea container, it's much more, of course. You know, it's more like one sensor per 10 to 20 ton.
Yeah, great stuff. And also, like, that's allowing, like, with the shelves being empty around the world, not these latest ones, but people sort of panic buying. Has that put added pressure onto you dealing with the exporters and everyone sort of flustering, where can we get our produce from, and sort of try and solidify their products?
Strangely enough, the supply of fruit and veggies around the world, there have been some supply issues, but most of the time there haven't been dramatic shortages or issues like we've seen with toilet paper or sometimes now the meat, because we're seeing it coming from such a diverse range of sources. We aren't sort of seeing that, because I guess the difficulty is in things like meat, we've seen the gatekeepers of that are the abattoirs, of course, where you've got so many suppliers coming through just a few abattoirs, and if you get labour issues there, it affects the whole lot of retail stores. But I guess the fortune of having product coming from, in the case of avocados, we've got 900 suppliers supplying that for Australia. So it's a fairly diverse group. Not that they're all supplying at one time, but that diversity offers resilience to the industry, I guess, and also for exports.
Yeah, amazing. So it's pretty cool to hear much more like in depth to what you do and get up to. What's one thing that you don't think a listener would know about your role in exporting into Asia, UAE?
I've found it interesting to sort of work with retailers in overseas markets and do training with them. So we sort of help retailers design displays in stores to help grow their markets, understand what their consumers are after, and actually talk to consumers through the stores, and then do training of those produce managers is always a very rewarding part. Because, we sell avocados, for instance, into Malaysia, and I've done training there, and I've asked the produce managers, and I'd have 50 produce managers in a training session. I'll say, well, how many of you have ever eaten an avocado? And only one of them had ever eaten one, and yet they were selling them. And I was saying, look, so then we had a session where they actually tried avocado for the very first time in their lives, just to taste what it's like in combination with different sorts of foods. So with nachos or with salads and with various things. And then we started talking about the flavors and what they're looking for from the fruit. So it's just interesting to sort of really start from that first step of understanding what you're selling, and then working out how to do the best job you can to increase your throughput. And we've done work with some stores where we increased their throughput by 80% over 3-month periods across 20 stores. And I think working from that understanding perspective really paid off.
Absolutely. And trying to just, it's quite rewarding seeing this happen down on the ground level with those where they're buying the end produce, so the consumers can take it up, take it home as well. So, and it's also cool that they're being educated on what actually the product is for the avocado, as you said before.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's always something different, always something interesting. So it's a way, and just asking questions to understand where people are coming from.
That's it. And always something happening in supply chains. People need produce right across the world, and there's a lot of things happening. It's a buzzing area of agriculture where I think a lot of people don't know where those opportunities are when they think of agriculture directly. So it's a great avenue to have a think about as well. So, but let's get back into APEN and a little around it. What is extension, and how important is it to you and your role?
A lot of people will have a different sort of interpretation about what extension is, but I guess my view is that it's about helping people move through a change and make sure that change really works for them in the long term. So, whether that's some of the work I was involved with recently with mango exporters, helping them adopt some of this live temperature monitoring and export consignments, or a whole range of other things, whether it's about sustainability or new tech or efficiencies or new tech. It's working with people to understand where they're at, what barriers they have, and how to overcome those to deliver a better result for that business.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're in a very, you know, as I said before, huge transition, a huge time for change within agriculture, of people adopting new technologies, but also techniques. You don't actually have to go out there and buy something, but finding new knowledge or resource where you can get a new technique that might improve your daily routine as a farmer, but as an exporter, retailer as well.
Yeah, certainly there's a whole range of tech and change happening. And, you know, certainly one of the big ones, of course, which you'll hear a lot about in horticulture is people talking about new robotics, and including harvesting. It's a big cost. It's a big risk when you can't get labor. So certainly there's some fantastic changes happening, and not the least of which is in packing sheds. You know, I see a lot of fantastic new tech being implemented there to really make sure there's a more efficient, low-cost result achieved for the grower.
Absolutely. I think you need, as a grower, if you have a packing shed or that's where you're processing it, you sort of need to think about how much your labor costs and how much you'd be able to take out from that if you're not being able to find labor to introduce technology to improve yourself. It's not getting rid of the worker, but it's actually improving the whole supply chain and how that can work for you. So the outlay may cost a lot more and it might be a bit scarier, but in the end, it will be a lot better for your farm.
Yeah, look, certainly in a number of industries now, we've certainly seen, you know, the tech roll in, and sometimes that means that not every grower has their own cool rooms and packing shed anymore. There used to be sort of small, simple setups, but, you know, I've certainly seen a number of in the avocado industry, I see sheds now where they're set up and they think, okay, look, it's going to cost me this amount, and some growers will go for that and some won't. They'll think, okay, I can just pack down the road with someone else and I won't have to make that extra capital outlay. Because, you know, once you're talking about some of these sheds that process a million trays of fruit, that means you'll need a robotic tray device to actually sort of automatically glue the tray. So it spits out a new tray that's glued to an exact temperature, to exact specifications every 2 seconds. Those sort of technologies aren't within everyone's grasp. And also, you know, the vision systems to look at the internal qualities of fruit as it passes through the pack shed to guarantee you're not sending ordinary fruit down the line. You know, these are very worthwhile investments, but quite capital intensive. So, you know, not everyone has that ability to invest in that. And that's probably a good thing for the industry long term, that we're seeing a little bit of rationalization of that. But you're also seeing some smart people who are setting up multiple farms now across the country, of course. And what they do is they'll move some of that machinery and gear from one district to the next. There's one harvest, it uses it, and then it moves it onto the next district to use it there. So, yeah, there's some really, really clever stuff going on.
Absolutely. And within the industry, there's always going to be those early adopters that want to bring on the products and see how they can work for them. And those that sit back a little bit more hesitant about how it will fit in to their daily routine.
Yeah, and look, sometimes there's competing technologies and ideas about how things might pan out. So, you know, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So, you know, that's always the case, I think. And I think since I started, there's always been people who are those real innovators who want to keep in front of that curve, who want to sort of be taking advantage of that and being able to sort of say to their buyers they've got this extra value add that they offer, and that's fine. That's part of business.
Yeah, 100%. So for yourself now, what are you most looking forward to about APEN in 2022?
Well, I guess one of the first opportunities is the fact that we've got our conference coming up on the 10th and 11th, and that's a great opportunity. Unfortunately, I'll be one of those virtual participants, so I won't be able to travel to Melbourne for that, but I'm really looking forward to that exchange of ideas. I think there must be something like about 100 presentations going on from people like myself, just to sort of share ideas and experiences. And I'll be trawling through both some of the live presentations, be it virtually, or some of the recorded ones that I'll look through and catch up on as well, just to look at that and then connect with with particularly some of those authors and those contributors during the conference through the platform that's being set up.
Yeah, absolutely. And some great hands-on masterclasses that will be available down there as it goes ahead. I'm really looking forward to it as a podcast and as a farmer, just to see what's happening in this side of agriculture and see how it can be distributed through the podcast and hopefully in the end help a few farmers with some new ideas.
Oh, look, and I've already had a look at through some of the topics that I saw a draft program just today, and some fantastic ideas there. I'm really looking forward to it.
100%. So for yourself, what are you most excited about 2022 other than APEN?
We're getting into a whole range of video production on one of the projects I work on, which is coming along. We just put out our first one just around Christmas time, and there's another five on the way. So that'll be a bit of an exciting time to see where that comes along. And we've got a couple of other projects just emerging at the moment. I'm sort of talking with over some of the concepts with some of the growers and the funders about that. So yeah, there's always a rebirth of ideas and excitement with the new year, a bit of new business development. So that's nothing but exciting, that one. So
absolutely, fresh face and going straight into it and having a go.
Well, that's also new partners, new ideas, new collaborators. It's always exciting to do that, without leaving those people you've sought help from in the past. You don't want to leave them in the dust, but it's new partners and ideas are always fantastic to really bring you a new perspective.
Absolutely, and a great motivator to keep going. Talking to people like yourself on the podcast, it's really good to see that there is some vibrance and key thinkers out there that are wanting to move the industry ahead.
I'm always inspired by everyone I meet on that. It's fantastic.
Absolutely. And before you go, what would be one piece of farm's advice for anyone looking to get into your side of agriculture, of exporting?
The work in supply chains, it's all about relationships. Listening to people, finding out where they're at, and trying to work with them to really deliver on some of those dreams and aspirations they have to really push their businesses ahead. And that can take 100 different forms. And so every day is exciting on that front.
Absolutely. Well, amazing to have you on the Farm Survivors podcast today, Noel, all part of the APEN conference.
Thanks for tuning in to a Farm Survivors episode. Go to farmsvice.com.au for more information and spread the word. If you love this episode, give it a sneaky 5-star review on Apple Podcasts so we can reach more farmers right across Australia. But until then, next Tuesday, keep on farming. Because you've listened right to the end of this episode, I'd love to give you a treat. Come on and join the Farmers Only Mailbag to receive exclusive content, but also a pretty consistent newsletter. Not only a newsletter, it's the Farmers Only Mailbag. So we're doing something a little bit different with Farms Advice. So subscribe at farmsadvice.com.au.